This is Tim Murdoch, and you're watching White Rabbit Radio's interview series. Today we have on a returning guest, Tom Sewell. And I was telling Tom before the show that I've had on Joel Davis 10 times on the show. The last time I actually wore a black bucket hat for a few minutes. I got a kick out of those guys wearing the black bucket hat, especially the one beating the drums. But a lot has happened in Australia since then. It's been, I guess it was right before he ended up getting tossed in jail, and we wanted to have Tom on to talk about what's going on in Australia and all the particular political shenanigans over there with them making it. It looks like to me, Tom, they basically are making it illegal to be white. They went that extra mile. We've always said it's not illegal to be white yet in America, but it looks like Australia is really trying to make it illegal to be white. Would you agree?
Yeah, I don't think we're at that stage yet, but it's obviously moving in that direction. They are trying to legislate against us in every way they can. And this is the current thing, which is stop white people from disliking other groups in society for the sake of social cohesion. So that's their new mantra. I don't know if it's come to the US yet, but here in Australia, all the politicians harp on about is social cohesion. So they're not even really saying diversity, equality, multiculturalism. They still say that occasionally to reinforce their point. But the main argument of the Uni Party is that we have to strengthen laws against political speech because social cohesion. And we need to improve social cohesion. And we need to basically create a multicultural police state. So that's what we have been warning about and advocating against. We don't want, multiculturalism because it leads to tyranny. And also it's just bad for us. It's not in our interests. Even if it didn't lead to tyranny, it's not in our racial, cultural, economic interest. So we're against it. And that makes us enemy number one in Australia to the political class, to the system bureaucrats. At this stage, it looks like we're enemy number two. So a little bit of an update for those that aren't aware. The Australian Parliament passed legislation called Combating Anti-Semitism Hate Bill, something like that. And so the pretense of the bill is that being an anti-Semite is illegal. Or you can have the thoughts, but you can't express the thoughts. So you can't say something that in Australia anymore that could be taken as he's encouraging people to dislike Jews. So if I'm speaking about the Jews or about Israel in Australia, in order to avoid really long prison sentences, obviously I've been to prison twice for minor violent offenses, and basically, if you attack me or my friends, then you're going to get hurt. Simple as. What they're now doing is they've changed the terrorism law, where it used to say you had to advocate for terrorism to go to jail for like 12 years or 10 years or 7 years. And now the law is not that you have to advocate for terrorism. It's the same prison time. But it's just if you encourage people to dislike Jews, then therefore that's the same as committing a terror offense, because you've basically convinced people to do a terror attack if you've convinced them to not like Jews. Because if you don't like Jews, the next step in their theoretical framework of how law works is you're then going to commit a Bondi terror attack. So we have to prevent Bondi terror attacks. So if you don't know what happened at Bondi, two Muslims went and killed a bunch of Jews and I think two white Australians at the beach. And the argument by the Jewish lobby is that Jews died not because of Muslim terrorists and not because of Muslim immigrants into the country that then went and trained with ISIS in the Philippines and were allowed to come back to Australia and own firearms. That's not the problem, according to the Jewish lobby. The problem is that neo-Nazis and a group called Hizbut Tahrir are spreading anti-Semitism into the Australian sort of public dialogue, and that's actually what needs to be stopped. And so those laws got passed that specifically targeted us and Hizb ut-Tahrir, which is, I think, some sort of Muslim advocacy group here in Australia that's probably the furthest, you know, like the most fervent Muslims out of all the Muslim groups. There's like hundreds of Muslim groups, and they're obviously the worst one of the lot. I think that they might be connected to the Muslim Brotherhood, like in ideology. I don't think in any practicality, but I think just they have a similar ideology to the Muslim Brotherhood. So they were seen as the biggest threat. And the legislation was to target us and them. And part of the way it was worded was, in order to ban a group as a hate group, they had to get the recommendation from ASIO. And so ASIO is like our FBI. It's like the Australian FBI or the Australian CIA. It's sort of like halfway between those two. And ASIO this week just recommended that the government ban Hizb ut-Tahrir as a hate group, and said, we recommend that these people are a hate group. They meet the criteria. And then once the government gets that recommendation from the State Department, from ASIO, they can then like tick the second box, which is they're banned. And so now in Australia, if you're a member of that group and you maintain membership and you continue organizing and you continue encouraging people to maintain membership and organize, then you can get between 7 to 15 years in jail. Now, ASIO did not recommend our group to be prescribed as a hate group. ASIO didn't say anything about us. So even though the whole point of this was to ban us and Hizb ut-Tahrir, ASIO hasn't started the process. They haven't ticked that box for the government to then ban us. The government are powerless at the moment to ban us. They actually can't. They legally cannot ban us right at this exact point in time. And by us, I mean the former National Socialist Network, because obviously we disbanded in order to not get retroactively charged with these really, really heinous laws. Like, because it's not just about imprisoning people that criticize Jews or imprisoning people that say things that make other people dislike Jews. It's also about stopping the groups that do it. So it's an anti-group thing, and it's an anti-free speech thing simultaneously. Like the law, the legislation covers both.
Okay, so I thought when I read that you were disbanding, can follow him on Telegram. His link is in the description. Tom Sewell, Uncensored. When I read that you were disbanding, I assumed you were disbanding to avoid ASIO. Isn't it ASIO?
ASIO, yeah. ASIO,
okay. Yeah. I assumed you were disbanding to keep them from hitting you with those laws.
Correct. So our disbandment, there's only two possibilities. Either our disbandment has made ASIO believe that they don't meet the criteria because they're disbanded, and therefore they did not recommend it to government so that the Labor government cannot prescribe us. That's option one. Option two is, which I think is the more likely scenario, is that we don't actually meet the criteria even if we didn't disband. And that our disbandment was carefully calculated to not go to jail for having a political opinion in Australia. So we were like, these laws are insane. Let's not challenge them in a martyrdom sense. Let's challenge them in the courts because they have let's challenge them in the high court as opposed to challenging it in the criminal court. So let's argue this at a constitutional matter, because we do have a constitution. We do have political rights in Australia. We are a democracy on paper. So that's not, these laws don't reflect that. And so it's not congruent with the framework that Australia is built upon. And that needs to be challenged and tested in court, the legitimacy of them. And it's better to do that as a free person, not a member of an organization, than as a member of an organization, but you're in prison for 12 years or 15 years. Like, that's just a really long time, to just try and fight this in the high court when you can fight it in the high court without being in jail. So it was the kind of rational decision to make. I don't think Hizb ut-Tahrir disbanded. So that's where, that's interesting. I hope I'm I don't care if I'm pronouncing that right or not. there's a clause in the law that says, not to talk too much about law, we can change the subject of this, but there is a clause in the law that says aliases. So this idea of if a group disbands and then rebrands as something else, they're still going to get 7 to 12 years or 7 to 15 years in jail.
Oh, wow. Wow, that's so crazy.
So, but that only applies if you prescribe the original group. So you have to prescribe group A, and then if they rebrand as group B, then you can put them in jail. If you don't prescribe group A, if group A disbands and you don't prescribe it and group B appears, I'm not saying this is a strategy or a tactic. It's actually not. But, even if we were to do that in theory, because they didn't prescribe group A, it'd be very difficult to prescribe group B. You'd have to go back and prescribe group A and be like, group B is a continuation of group A. We're banning group A and therefore banning group B. So,
okay.
If they want to ban us, the fact that we disbanded doesn't stop them from still banning us. They can still ban a disbanded group. It's not like, ha ha ha, we've got a legal loophole, you can't ban us anymore. That's not what we're doing, and that's not what we're saying. We still expect that there's a chance that they could prescribe a disbanded organization to ensure it can never, ever be phoenixed. You know what I mean? Like to kill it while it's disbanded. But at this stage, what I'm communicating with you is we haven't even begun to challenge this in the courts, and already we haven't been in that initial Holocaust. You know what I mean?
Now I know they're sacrificing
a Muslim organization to try to get us banned, and now they've done the sacrifice and we're not banned. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
The government would be seething that ASIO has not done this. Like the Labour government doesn't want to ban Hizb ut-Tahrir because the Labour seats are all Muslim strongholds. So they don't want to piss off the Muslims. They were just like, hey, let's just sacrifice this group just for the sake of the Jewish lobbies. I won't tell you who we've got spies everywhere, right? And we had people go to the Jewish lobbies meeting, the deputies. And they were absolutely abusing Chris Minns, who's the Premier of New South Wales, and they were absolutely abusing the Prime Minister and saying, like, why? We don't care about Hizb ut-Tahrir. Why are you not banning the Nazis? Why they are the most serious threat to our power in this country or our existence, our existential, power system. Why are you not doing this?
Well, they might have had you not disbanded.
Maybe that absolutely, yeah. There's a chance that if we didn't disband, there's a chance that this week would have been the week that it happened. So it's a very quick process. Like they didn't start this until I think it was mid-January, I think, and then some of this stuff started getting cleared around mid-Feb, and then now we're the start of March, and boom, they've from start to finish. I think it was less than 3 months.
It's all very, very disturbing at the same time.
It's very early days is what I'm saying to you. It's very early days. This is like a new paradigm. 2026 for us in Australia is a new paradigm. We're just, taking a step back and assessing what's going on because we don't want to end up like England where there were groups prescribed in England and there's a lot of political prisoners in England. Like Australia, we got Joel Davis. We, Jacob Hassan was just released. So we had Jacob Hassan. We've got Brandon Koshel, the guy that did the speech, and allegedly he said that Jews are the enemy of Australia in the speech, and he's been sentenced to 1 year in jail for just saying those words in a speech, in a political speech while he was soapboxing. And then there's three guys in immigration detention, and one of them was Matthew Gruder. He got deported. There's a guy called... I don't know if I'm allowed to say his name, actually. And then there's another guy called Jan who are in immigration detention because they weren't citizens. So, there's a lot of political prisoners from our org. Like that's, four guys and another three in detention. So seven guys have been treated in this way for being members of our organization prior to any of this paperwork coming through, right. This legislation.
In the UK, Jacob Persant, who I know just got out, correct?
Yeah, that's. I think I covered him. Yeah, I said Jacob, Joel. Brandon.
You did say okay, Jacob.
Yeah. All right. I'm pretty sure it did. And then, but in the UK is like there are guys that have been doing 10 years in jail. Like they were locked up 10 years ago.
Well, Germany's crazy too.
Yes. I get a lot of letters actually from German prisoners.
It is very crazy. Guys getting locked up over white power music for 3 years or something, or actually skinhead music. It's just absolutely insane. We would need a flow chart to how many political prisoners are across the United States and across Europe at any given time.
Yeah.
It's very difficult.
Yeah. Australia is really small. I'm not coming on here tonight and saying like Australia is the most, you know, draconian, da 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 da. Like obviously what's going on in Germany and in England is on another level.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're in a new paradigm. Like what it looks like, these laws that they've put in and how they're starting to treat political dissidents in Australia, it looks like we're about to be on par with Germany and England. Like over the next 5 years, we're going to see the same dynamic. So we have to be very, very responsible. We're ultimately responsible for people's safety and security. So we have to, we have to try every peaceful option. Like peace is an option. And we have to ensure that, we're doing things by the book, even if we don't agree with the book. Because there's a lot of people that support us, and that support is growing. That support is growing. People can see that we're sincere, that we're genuine. We're not just angry for no reason. Like we're not just angry young men marching around in masks. You know what I mean? Like the average person in society is just like, hang on a minute. They're rightfully angry, whether you agree with the tactics or not. Like I would say we have mass support of the white population in Australia. Like undoubtedly, I would say we're over 51%. And you know, I can't show you a poll, you know, but I'm telling you, we have had our friends that work with a polling company, and what they said to me was, I won't say who this is, but this is a pretty serious political individual in Australia, and his advice to me was that Tony Burke and Albanese would have looked at the polling of how our political party was going to go in their seat, and they would have realized that we wouldn't have polled enough, we wouldn't have got enough votes to take their seat off them, like to win the seat, because their seats are so majority non-white. But we would have had enough of a swing vote to get rid of the prime minister from his seat. So we could have, even if the Labour Party won the election at the next federal election that's coming up, we can get enough vote in this country to get rid of the prime minister. We can't replace him at this stage. We can't get that much of a vote. We're not polling, like that's not what the polls are showing. The polls are showing that we're the swing vote, that we make the difference, that we can de-seat whoever we want across the whole country. And so that is incredibly powerful. With, you know, the polling is saying that in some areas we could get elected. So these aren't public polls. So people just have to take my word for it that I have friends, which, you know, some people might find hard to believe, but being the most radical, you know, evil, horrible, vile, disgusting human being in Australia, according to the media. There's actually a lot of people in places that want to see us win up until a certain point. I don't know if they want to see, I don't know if all these people want us to see in power, like the government, but they want us to see, they want to see us at the table to try and stop the wokes. You know what I mean? Like there's a lot of good quality, old stock Australians that want to see the woke put in their place, and they want to see us at the table. So that's massive progress. That was not the case 5 years ago. That we were just this weird fringe, nobody loves us, nobody cares about, these are just annoying agitators, why don't they just shut up? You know, that was kind of the attitude, like these guys are idiots. And now it's like, no, like you go to a comment section, a normie comment section, not one of our comment sections, a normie comment section on Facebook, and you'll find there are just hundreds and thousands of comments saying Thomas Sewell for prime minister.
Interesting. Right now, of course, they have a new multicultural police unit, or they formed something new. Is that a joke, or is it very serious? Are they harassing you guys at all? Are they saying you can't hang out with colleagues from NSN? How does this work?
No, it was our instructions. The police have said nothing to us. The police have said nothing to us. The government has said nothing to us. We've been stonewalled, I guess you could say. Like, we're completely left out of the conversation, which, like, that's what I would do to my political opponents. I mean, I don't know if I would include them in the conversation. But yeah, we've been completely stonewalled. Not that I'm sitting and waiting for orders. It's more like, it's interesting that like a liaison officer hasn't said like, you know, hey, we're monitoring this, blah, 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 or tried to intimidate me, or, you know, I mean, usually when stuff like this happens, you know, when it rains, it pours. And in my experience, you know, we're in like a metapolitical war. And when they drop artillery on you, they also run at the machine guns. You know what I mean? Like it's combined arms warfare. I've always known it's combined arms warfare. These things always happen in waves. So we might get 12 months where we're just completely left alone. And then there might be like a 2 month, 3 month period where we're getting charged left, right, and center. And that didn't make sense to me years and years ago when I was pretty new to this. But I think a lot of it comes down to the paid mercenaries of the state. They have to justify their budget. And when they come up for budget review, it's just like, well, we gave you $220 million to combat the NSN, or we gave you $1.2 billion to combat hate and anti-Semitism, which is like, we're like the whole budget. What have you done? How many arrests have you made? Like, you know what I mean? They're obviously getting audited by the wokes in charge of them. And so then the police are just like, oh shit, oh, we got to make a few arrests. And so when they made this task force at a federal level, they're making it at state and federal levels. And when they made the federal level task force, there's like, it's crazy that the federal level task force, the head of the Australian Federal Police, which is, I guess that's our FBI and ASIO is like our CIA. But the head of the Australian Federal Police said that these groups, that this police unit is going to target and disrupt groups before they can commit crime, before they can break these laws. So she said on camera to the public at a press conference that they've made a multicultural task force to disrupt people before they commit a hate crime. So law-abiding people, disrupt. And what we experienced when that task force was built was I went on holiday over to WA with Blair Cottrell, and we were with a friend from WA, and he was showing us the university that he went to and like just the beautiful architecture. And there was like a reflecting pool in the university, and Blair and I were standing by the reflecting pool, and our friend said, oh, this would be a great photo like of your trip. Like I'll take a photo of you. And and so we're taking the photo, and Blair being Blair, if you know who Blair is, he like did a double bicep flex for the photo. And you know, we took the photo and we continued our holiday in Western Australia, flew back to Melbourne, and about a week later, they kicked my door in, the federal police. They kicked my door and tackled me in my hallway. And they took my phone, they took all my electronics, they handcuffed me, put me on the at my dining table. And they went through my phone. They basically said, what's your PIN code? And if you don't, in Australia, if you don't give your PIN code, it's 5 years in jail, or up to 5 years in jail. And for someone like me, that'd probably give me a big sentence. They actually tried to get me on that charge once before, because I tested it once and I said, oh, my lawyer will give it to you. Like no comment, like speak to my lawyer. And they charged me with it. And I luckily I wasn't found guilty of it. The judge was just like, nah, I don't think that you did the correct process when you asked him for his code. Because I don't think she wanted to see how that law is challenged by, you're not lying to them and you're not saying nothing. You're just saying, I want legal representation. And can that be used as a defense? Because the police was like saying to me, you can't use that as a defense. And I said, I want to speak to a lawyer. Like, I'm not giving you my, I didn't even say I'm not giving you my code. Because saying I'm not giving you my code is like proof that you committed a crime. So you gotta be careful. So anyway, I gave him a passcode, and they're going through my photos, and they're scrolling back in my photos to the date that I was in Perth. And they were looking for a photo because a Muslim girl walked past while we were taking that photo. A Muslim girl walked past, and she recognized me and Blair from all the way 10 years ago when we were doing anti-Islam stuff, like the protest movement. And she called the police and said, I saw Blair Cottrell throw a Roman salute at the university. And they took, and he was standing next to Tom Sewell, and they took a photo of it on their phone. So Blair and I got raided. We had our doors kicked in because this Muslim girl like made a fake allegation. And so they're looking for the photo, this alleged photo of Blair throwing a Roman salute, so they can put us in jail for a year. And they can't find the photo. They just, obviously they just find a photo of Blair doing like the double bicep. And so, you know, and they're thinking, oh, I must be in deleted messages. And so they take our phones for like 3 months. And I didn't get charged with anything. Blair didn't get charged anything. But they, you know what I mean? That's what we're talking about with disruption. That's disruption. Like that's not a nice feeling, being like tackled in front of your family, like in your family home, by a bunch of mercenaries for, you know, Israel.
Yeah, I mean, it's just.
So, and I mean, that was within the last 6 months.
So they have this new task force. Does it have any new police powers, or is it just kind of like a formulation of the old under some kind of new budget or something?
It's just a new budget. I don't like their powers are unlimited. Like and the worst thing is that the courts, the system is just in free fall. The system legitimacy is in free fall. They don't even enforce the Open Courts Act anymore. Like, so we have an act that says that court has to be open. Like, if a court case is going on, you can walk in. And they are constantly doing closed courts now. They've found a loophole. And so it's closed courts. I mean, it's just like, we're meant to have open justice. So the laws are infinite. There's infinity laws. That's the problem. So they don't even need to change laws, and neither do we. When we take power, we don't even need to change any of these laws. There's so many laws, and they can be interpreted however you want. It's a two-tier justice system. If they don't like you, they've got a law for you. They've already got a law for you. If they like you, doesn't matter. It doesn't apply. No, it didn't happen. Like, I'm telling you, I was saying this to Ferryman the other day. I did a stream with Ferryman. A transsexual Antifa bomber blew up a toilet block at the Arms Expo. He planted a bomb in the Arms Expo. The police didn't charge him with terrorism. He had a summons to the magistrate's court, like, which is the lowest court. The lowest court. And he got community service for planting a bomb for politically motivated reasons. What the fuck? Like, this is crazy. This is madness. I mean, Phil Galea, just the kind of slow guy, not all there in the head, right? Angry about these communists attacking people at a rally in 2015. The rally I was radicalized by. I went to that same rally. I saw the communists use all this violence, and I was just like, I'm getting involved in real life politics. I'm not sitting by the sidelines anymore. This is crazy. I went down to this rally to just hear a speech, and people are assaulting me. I was like, this is like, they've broken the contract. I'm like, well, it's war then. You know what I mean? It's total war. It's just like, you just used physical violence against me because I politically disagree. I was so naive back then. I didn't think anyone would do that. I'd never had an encounter in my life. And I've been involved in a lot of violence, a lot of, you know, fighting, street fighting, in being in the army, you know, a bit of martial arts. It's like, I've been exposed to violence, a lot of violence. I had never, ever been in an argument with someone that disagreed with me politically to the point where it resulted in violence. And so I was like, oh shit, is that where we're at? And obviously what I did was like, we need to build a group to protect people at these rallies. And so that was my, like, when I was radicalized. But if you're a little bit, you know, out there, crazy, slow, one or the other, you know, what Phil Galea did was he allegedly downloaded the Anarchist Cookbook, and he allegedly was saying in a Facebook group chat, we should throw Molotov cocktails at the communist headquarters, which is called Trades Hall. And there were two informants in that group chat, and he got 12 years in jail. 12 years in jail for advocating for terrorism. But he didn't commit a terror attack. He didn't really even plan a terror attack. He was just a moron. He's just a fucking idiot, just fed posting in an open Facebook group chat with like dozens of people. And he got 12 years in jail. He's still in jail. He'd be coming out of jail. Like, you know what I mean? And then an actual terrorist bomber is getting community service for Antifa. So like, we're just so beyond the idea of justice in this country. I mean, the same magistrate that kept me on remand. So I wasn't allowed to have bail. You know, both times I've been arrested for violent criminal offenses or alleged violent criminal offenses, I don't get bail. But they let out rapists and home invaders, and it's like their 40th offense. And the court, the police say, we can't keep them locked up. We can't keep them locked up.
Is there a problem with room in jail? Is that what they're saying?
No, there's always room for me. What?
Seems to be room for our guys. Any jail in the Western world, there seems to be room for our guys. That's true. But I mean, what are they saying? Well, we can't keep them. We have too many.
They say any lie they need to say.
Are they saying something?
They say anything they need to say. They just make it up as they go along. It's in the bin. Justice is in the bin. There's no legitimacy. There's no system legitimacy. The justice is in the bin. We were celebrating Australia Day 2 years ago now, I'm pretty sure. Maybe it was just a year ago. We were celebrating Australia Day. Time flies when you're having fun. But in Adelaide. And they arrested us for walking down the street singing Waltzing Matilda, carrying Aussie flags on Australia Day. And they just were like, "Not pre-crime. You're planning a riot. So we're going to arrest you."
I remember
you.
That.
And they cleared out the jail. They only had 16 cells in the cell block in the CBD. They only had 16 cells. And so they cleared out the jail, the cells, and put 16, and they arrested 16 guys and put 16 of us in jail for 3 days. And then released us with the charge of loitering, which means you're planning to break and enter into someone's house, and we can't prove you were breaking and entering. That's what loitering is. Loitering, like obviously loitering is like, you know, loiter around on a street corner, but the criminal charge of loitering is when like the cops have to prove that you had a screwdriver on you. You were like just hanging around outside someone's house. Like there's evidence that proves that you were probably going to do a break and enter. And so we're charging with a very minor offense to say, like, you know, we basically caught you in the act. And the other parts of loitering are like, I guess, like not leaving a pub when you're drunk and like you're standing outside the pub drunk. And it's kind of like a move on order. You know, so they just completely, and our constitution in Australia has a giant clause in it, a giant clause that said no state or federal can use a law or pass a law that inhibits political communication. So it's not that we have free speech in this country. It's that the government can't use a law. So they can't use loitering to stop a political protest. They can't use a criminal offense to stop people from politically communicating. And they just did it. They just outright did it. You know, and it's, you know, it's in the courts, but it's a long battle through the courts. And, it, you know, not most people don't invest in it because they're just like, the courts are corrupt. So what we're doing is we're saying, well, let's see how corrupt it is, because it's corrupt at the lowest level. Absolutely. They're all activists at the magistrates court. Not all of them, but probably over 50%. But as we start going up in the courts, we start getting treated a little bit more fairly. So let's give peace a chance.
Okay. So to wrap it up, the 30, they say there's only 30 of these, but it seems like every police officer there is one of these, every police officer in Australia, 30 new multicultural community liaison officers. You haven't had to deal with these guys yet.
No. Because a multicultural, the task force is different to the liaison officers. That's actually two separate things. The task force is like hundreds of people. It'll be a whole floor in the CBD monitoring social media. The multicultural liaison officers is a cop that goes to the mosque, or a cop that goes to the Jewish community, or a cop that goes to the Sikh community. So multicultural liaisons are, they're just basically like an ambassador. It's just like, it's an interesting dynamic where we're living in a multicultural police state where the local mosque will have a police contact. So they've got like an ambassador. They've got someone that can walk between the two parties. So by doing that, like before multiculturalism, there wasn't police officers that were ambassadors to each church or each footy team or each community center. Like Australia is this homogeneous, united people where, you know, Anglo-Celtic, we're English, Irish, Scottish, Welsh, and then the rest of Europe, you know what I mean? We've got Germans, we've got Dutch, we've got Scandinavians, we've got Italians, we've got Greeks, you know, et cetera, maybe some French even, you know, we're this homogeneous population. We don't need police officers embedded in separate communities because the police are just a social function of, you know, keeping law and order in a harmonious society. But under multiculturalism, you have to have a government like commissar, liaison officer to hear out and negotiate, because it's a negotiator, isn't it? Ultimately, it's a negotiator. And what we see when we look at downstream of what's happened in England, where there has been, I know we all don't like Tommy Robinson, but Tommy Robinson years and years ago exposed this, that there would be a Muslim sex pest and they would commit a horrible crime, and the Muslim community would surround the police station and say, like, we're going to burn down the police station, let them out. And this doesn't make the media, but this is what Tommy Robinson was reporting on. And he was saying that the reason for a lot of these cover-ups is like the fear that these local police stations had, that the government wasn't supporting them in standing up as a united institution against this fifth column that was in their society. You know, and this is the police's excuse for inaction from the old school cops from 30, 40 years ago that allowed this to start. I'm not saying that's what the police are doing now. The police are just openly turning a blind eye to it now. But allegedly how this started in the 80s and the 90s was through like Muslim, like just gang warfare. Like they would have a meeting at the mosque. They would say, we're going to go down to the station. And the imam would go and talk to the police officer and say, you know, you got to drop the charges against this guy. Or we're going to burn down England, basically. We're going to burn down this area. Everyone's angry. Everyone's furious. And so it's mob justice. And yeah, that's you know, that's why you need community liaison officers. That's why you need someone, because now it's a trusted member of the police to negotiate with a trusted member of this community. And so if there is a conflict or an issue, they can negotiate and work out, you know, can we prevent this, da, 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 da. And also it's about like, ultimately that person is a spy, because you know that's the issue with ambassadors, is like they're a spy one way or the other. And so what you've got now is, do you trust your community liaison officer? Like, because you're going to pick a Muslim, aren't you? If it's someone that's going to deal with the Muslim community, the smart thing to do would be to pick a Muslim, because they understand the Muslim psyche, they can negotiate better for the police's interest. So you're picking someone, you know what I mean? So does this person work for the police, or does this person work for, you know, like Arminius was a community liaison officer with the Germanic tribes. Perfect guy for the job, right? You know, Herman, you know.
Are whites going to get their own community liaison officer, since the Asians are getting theirs, the Indians are getting theirs, the Muslims are getting theirs, the Jews already have all kinds of them. Are the whites going to eventually get that? And in a system based on negotiating, everything's negotiated, would whites have to eventually? I guess if they clamor hard enough.
The community liaison officer for the white people is called counterterrorism. And they're the people dealing with the white community leaders. The white community leaders are under investigation by counterterrorism, by counterterrorism command and security intelligence unit. That's how the police is structured. The white people are being managed by counterterrorism command and security intelligence unit. The brown people have a multicultural diversity officer that negotiates with them. And here's them out. And what are the concerns of your community? So I can raise that at the next meeting. But the concerns of the white community are basically borderline terroristic. So we gotta monitor that. We gotta treat them as criminals, as pre-criminals, and we gotta build a database. We gotta build a database of all the white people that don't like what's happening to the country. And if the brown people have a complaint, we don't have a database of the brown people. They don't have a database of the brown people. You know, they don't have a database of the communists. You know,
they might have one that we.
Well, I don't think the state police do. I don't think the state police do. I think ASIO definitely does, and Palantir and all that, and like Zog definitely does. But I don't think the state police do, because if they do, they're just openly not charging them for crimes, because they're committing crimes all the time. We're not informants to the police, but we know who these people are. We've got better either we've got better intel than the police on the communists in Melbourne, or you know, in Australia. Either we've got better intel than they do, and we've got more people, you know, embedded in them than the police do, or the police are just, you know, purposely not charging these people with like crimes, because they do a lot of they destroy a lot of statues here in Australia just in the middle of the night. And it's really obvious who's doing it, like, because they film it and they gloat about it and they put it up online, destroying like statues of the Anzacs or statues of, you know, like war heroes, statues of, former kings and queens.
No investigation.
And there's a group in Australia called the British Australian Community, which is a group that's trying to exist within the multiculturalism from the white perspective. And, they're very, very respectful men. They're academics, and they've got a lot of moral courage to do what they're doing. They have raised concerns with police about the attack on, you know, heritage sites. These are heritage listed sites. You know, this is our heritage. And as an advocacy group, they've raised concerns, and they're a very large organization. This is not like just two dudes in a back room writing a letter to police. Like, they are a well-respected community group. And the police just ignore them. The police just ignore them. And the same way, like, if there was an anti-Semitic attack, like, let's say, for example, if the there was an attack where a Muslim guy, I think he got drunk and he went into a Jewish cemetery and he knocked over a bunch of grave stones. And so that was considered obviously like a hate crime. And, straight away, the police are having a meeting with the Jewish community about like how they feel about what's happened. You know what I mean? But when there's a white community group that's like, hey, we speak for, like, these are British monuments. These are modern monuments to the British colonization of Australia. This is the heritage of British Australians. And, we're putting in I can't remember the exact wording is, but we're putting in a notice of concern as representatives of this community. We'd like to have a discussion about this. We'd like to have a meeting about this. And they just get stonewalled. So they just like eat shit, basically. And there's no investigation. And SBS, which is one of our state-owned broadcasters, I think it's called the State Broadcasting Service or something like that, SBS, they actually went and interviewed these Antifa terrorists. And I don't mean terrorists in terms of violent crime. I mean terrorists in terms of just like committing property damage for politically motivated reasons, like terrorists with a little T, not terrorism with a big T. And the SBS, which is a state broadcaster, actually met with these people and helped them gloat about what they've done and promoted them. The state broadcaster met with them. And you see that in Germany a lot as well. Like, there's a lot of documentaries on Antifa in Germany, and the state broadcaster is just promoting these people.
Yeah, they do.
They're just platforming them, like, they're openly promoting them. Like, look how noble they are, what they're doing. Mm. You know. So she gave them a little bit of stick to try to pretend to be objective, but it was just platforming. Like, yeah, you gotta tear down the statues of the white people because always was, always will be Aboriginal land. We're gonna give it back to the Aboriginal people, and the only way to do that is just keep tearing down the statues of the evil white people. And these are all obviously like white people themselves.
Always giving apples tens of millions of dollars. It seems billions, like billions, or something.
Billions.
They're billions, always, hundreds they're always of billions, suing for hundreds something of billions. And getting all kinds of money.
Hundreds of billions, and that's the same in all these New World countries. You know, all the colonial countries. So New Zealand's the same, Australia, Canada. You know, America. Yeah. But yeah, it's interesting times. It's very interesting times. And I'm so excited to just be alive and live in the most magical time period in human history. Like, it's just crazy. Yeah. Like, all of history has just led to this point where the, every single white nation, every single nation of Aryan or European stock is under threat by, existential threat for its demographic. I mean, I don't think this has ever happened. Like, you can see examples in history, like the collapse of Rome, where the Romans got ethnically replaced, and there's, heaps of soft genocides and hot genocides throughout human history. But what a time, like, the age of technology, the age of communication, like, we don't even live, it's still my birthday where you are, you know what I mean? Like, it's the 6th of March over here, it's the 7th, it was my birthday yesterday. Just slide that in there. But
happy birthday. 33
today. Well, yesterday, technically, but 33 today for you. And just to think what the next 50 years is going to hold. Yeah, I'm riding, I'm surfing the Kali Yuga. Let's do it. This is fun as, don't want to wash out. And if you do, you want to be able to get back on the surfboard pretty quick. But it's exciting.
For sure. I was looking over your recent news reports, and I was looking over Wikipedia, which is kind of funny for you. But this, there was a time period there when you were in the news all the time because you were allowed to organize, and guys would just take over the news. I think that's one of the things that pissed them off so much. And then, of course, you heckled the actual who was it you heckled right before Joel got put into the clink? You heckled someone.
Oh, Cinda Allen, the premier. Yeah, the premier. I don't know what the equivalent of governor. It's equivalent to the U.S. like the governor of a state.
That seemed to really piss them off.
Yeah, just Cinda Allen, yeah. Oh, yeah. They were seething. I've never seen the media stoop so low, and it didn't work. It won me more support. But the media were calling me a sewer rat, like the mainstream media. They were like, I think the article in like the biggest newspaper in the state was the day a sewer rat, a rat crawled up from the sewer and confronted a premier. And it's like, that is crazy. Like, that is on another level. That makes high school seem civil. So they've lowered themselves that, and it didn't work. The funniest part is that doesn't work. It polarizes society. It's like, that's like infinitely worse, but on a smaller scale than, what were the MAGA people saying when Hillary Clinton called them, like, not despicable, but like irredeemable? What was it? And they were all owning it. What was that word she used? And it really backfired.
Hillary Clinton called them deplorables.
Deplorables. Yes. Yeah. Deplorables. Yeah. And that doesn't work. That backfires. You call them deplorables. It's like, oh, we're the deplorables. We're the deplorables. Yeah. So it's like, they went even further than that. They didn't call me a deplorable. They called me a sewer rat. And so most people that meet me in public, they can tell I'm not. And, you know, there are child rapists in this country. There are, you know what I mean? Like, there are pedophile elites in this country. There are judges who are convicted, who are getting charged with pedophilia, and their names are getting suppressed in the media. And the media never calls these people vile. The media never calls these people rats. Like, the media just state the facts. They don't have any political opinions when it comes to an elite person that's done something wrong, or just any person that's done anything wrong. But then if you confront the premier, because the premier was on the news for like a week straight leading up to the rally, telling people not to go to the rally, saying that they're going to make it hard for us. The premier of New South Wales is even worse. I think he said that they're going to like disrupt traffic to stop people like driving in and disrupt the trains. I think they shut the trains down. So because this was a nationwide rally and the government was freaking out. It was March for Australia. And it was like, let's all come out, do a march for Australia. It was just like patriot coded. And I mean, in Melbourne, we had about 50,000 people, which is the biggest rally we've had politically in Melbourne since the COVID rallies. And obviously those were probably 250, maybe. Some people were saying 400, 500. Others were exaggerating to 1 million. I don't think there were 1 million, but I think the footage shows probably around 250,000 at the anti-COVID lockdowns. But that was against, you know, that's specifically anti, you know, you're taking away my rights and freedoms and I can't go to work and I can't go to the pub. So that's like immediate interest. So it is easy to mobilize that many people for a one-off. But in terms of like, I love Australia and therefore I'm anti-woke, you know, I mean, you can see what's happening with the destruction of the national identity. Australians are very apolitical. Like 50,000 is massive. Like in Europe, that might not seem like that much. Like the Croatians do a music concert and it's like a Croatian patriotic music concert and they get like 4 million people. And there's like 4.5 million, you know, Croatians, like, you know what I mean? Like there's stuff like that in Europe, but here in Australia, like, Aussies are really apolitical. Aussies don't give a fuck. That's their primary issue. And like Americans, I think you're a bit more individualistic. So it's not that you don't give a fuck. It's just like, you know, I'm an individual. What can I do? Whereas Aussies are just like, yeah, country's fucked, mate. Like, just make money. You know, like they've just got this really apolitical energy, and it's going away. That energy is not growing. That energy, people are getting fed up. And that's what everyone's saying, that they're moving beyond like, yeah, I acknowledge this is a serious problem, but I don't care. It's, I acknowledge it and I want to do something about it. I'm fed up. I want to do something about it. And so that's why the government is trying to make pathways of doing something about it illegal. They want to basically take away all the potential pathways of the fed up people and then to be able to cordon the fed up energy into a controlled opposition containment right party that's not going to go anywhere and not going to solve the problem. And then they're kicking the can down the road for another 5 to 10 years. That sets everything back. So that's, they're doing a containment right strategy. That's what we're calling it here in Australia, where there's all these fresh, brand new people that have just like out of nowhere, out of the ether, there's all these fresh, brand new civic nationalists. And they're getting platformed by the mainstream media. And it's really interesting to see, you know, and there's people that have left the mainstream media here in Australia and they're setting up their own podcasts and they're associating with like pretty hardcore, from a civic nationalist perspective, like, you know, a real change in rhetoric. Obviously, they're cucks on the primary issue, but they're really strong on every other issue. It's like everything but what the Nazis are saying. You know, it's like everything else. We'll talk about everything else.
So they're tough on Islam.
Yeah.
They want to cut back immigration. They're talking about cutting back immigration.
Yeah.
But not on race.
Australia's,
they're just dead on race.
Australia's, they're saying all the kind of identitarian talking points. But it's nothing to do with race. I'm not a racist. This is nothing to do with race. I've got caramel friends. It's that nonsense. So that's a huge improvement in rhetoric from the outright controlled opposition political parties, but they're doing metapolitics now. There's never been metapolitics at that level. There's been just these cuck political parties that are trying to do that, or they've got a legacy of that, which is One Nation, which is the primary political party, which is kind of like Australia's version of Reform, like Reform in the UK. I know America, it's hard to comprehend parties further to the right of the Republican Party, but yeah, like European and Australian politics is more spread out. It's not just left and right. There's a whole bunch of left and there's a whole bunch of right, which is good. That's what, I don't know how it's possible in America, and I've talked about this for hours before, so I won't go into it. But yeah, that Americans have a unique situation with dealing with metapolitics and the relationship of metapolitics and politics. Like that relationship is really complex in America. It's actually really simple outside of America. So
I see. Well, let's go over this piece that you were in. This was the most recent, your most recent headline around the world, which is pretty basic statement. Don't want Australia to turn into India. Neo-Nazi activist racist outburst on camera. Reporter slammed for nodding along. The blonde woman nodding along to Tom. The Indians got really upset over that. This statement obviously isn't illegal yet. It's just a basic statement.
No.
We don't want Australia to turn into India. But you still managed to get headlines, even though they've made it illegal for you to organize. I thought it was pretty funny.
Yeah. Look, the mainstream media will put up a video of us and it will get 500,000 views or 1,000,000 views on their social media. And then the next 10 things they put up about how goldfish are good for your home living and other nonsense. You know, it'll get 4,000 views, 3,500 views. Like, so they've got no content. Like, they're just boring. The news is boring. You know, a big story on the news for the mainstream media here in Australia is just crime, just African crime, you know, or Arab crime. Like, that's the only time they get views. That's what they might get 50,000, 100,000 views on that video. And they've disabled the comment section. And then, you know, but then when they talk about us, when they talk about the NSN, White Australia, Thomas Sewell, Jacob Hassan, you know, Joel Davis, even the videos about Brandon Koshaw, who, you know, people don't know who that is. He's not a public facing guy. He's just a guy that stood up and made one speech. That was the first act he's ever done publicly. You know, we're talking millions of views on these. So the Australian public are literally following along.
Just a picture of him getting arrested by that Indian went super viral on my feed.
Long, they're losing their apoliticalness as Australia polarizes. It's a perfect storm. It's absolutely incredible. Yeah, perfect surfing conditions. It's just crazy. Yeah,
now,
like
Babbitt,
as people. Yeah, sorry.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry, didn't want to cut you off.
No, all good. I'm just making note that we're about an hour in.
Yeah.
I accidentally did a 4-hour stream with Ferry the other day, and I wanted to try to keep this one short.
How long you want to go for?
But I'm keen to do another maybe 35 minutes.
That's fine. Totally fine.
But can we have a break now? I'm just going to get a drink.
Sure.
And then we'll do the second half.
Sure. No problem.
No, cheers. I appreciate it.
We'll do a quick intermission, guys. We'll be back in a couple minutes. Okay, we're back. And let's see. Here's Tom. So I noticed that free speech is getting a lot of attention in Australia. People are wondering, you know, what happened to our free speech? I'll let you get your headset on.
Sorry, I didn't hear anything you were saying. What was it?
It seems like free speech is getting a lot more attention in Australia than ever. People are wondering what happened to their free speech when it's been going for many several years. Usually this happens to the public, though. There becomes some type of event or a series of events where the public are just learning about things that you think they would already know about, but they don't. There's usually some kind of catalyst. And we have Babbitt, this Babbitt character, which makes me laugh. I think it's pretty funny. Ralph Babbitt, he's pushes for free speech referendum, rejects censorship. How likely is something like that to even get any attention? I mean, he is a senator.
Oh, it'll get attention, but it will never happen because he's got no standing, because he's an independent senator, or he's from a micro party. So there's a billionaire here in Australia that's kind of like Australia's Trump, called Clive Palmer. And he dumped like $100 million on the election, and he only got one guy elected, which was Ralph Babbitt. So not a good return on investment. but he does that. He does that every year, every election cycle. He just dumps like $100 million on usually just trying to get the Liberal Party votes. And so a lot of his satellite party, so he'll create a satellite party. He'll get 7% of the vote. He'll get one guy elected, but they pump 7% of the vote back into the center right party, the Liberal Party. So it's just like a satellite kind of operation. And then he probably gets tax breaks from the government for his mining operations, so he continues to become a billionaire, and then he can continue pumping money back in the system.
What is the name of the micro party?
Oh, they change it every year, mate. I don't know what it's called at the moment. I think it was called the UAP at one point, the United Australia Party, and I think now it's called Trumpet of Patriots. And then I think actually now it's called something else. Like I don't know, dude. Like he's just a retard. He just has no idea what he's doing, and he's got so much money, and he's really good at making money. It must be easy to make money in mining in Australia because you can be a moron. Well, he's not a moron, but he's just got no political savviness, and he's got really bad advisors, and he's just a system person. But yeah, Babbitt is, you know, he's going to Caramel Island. He's going first class. He's getting all the caramel honeys.
Is he
Mauritian? No, he's Mauritian. He's like French Mauritian. Okay. So he's a proper caramel. He's mixed race, but like, you know, it's like homogenized into the caramel race. It's not like he's like a child of mixed race parents, you know what I mean? He's like from a long line of caramel people,
like a South America, like in South
America. Yeah, kind of. Yeah. So like obviously the French colonized Mauritius, and there's a bit of Indian blood in there. There's whatever the native Mauritian blood is, and there's French blood in there. So they're all kind of like a mixture of that. Not all of them, I guess in the South you'd call them Creole or something. I don't know, but anyway, they're caramel people. And, he's gone first class. He's an absolute legend. Like he's the nicest non-white person I know. Like he's just a legend.
He basically has taken up.
He's our biggest offender. He's our biggest offender.
He's like, taken up all your Senate issues, right? He's basically taking up all innocent issues from a, brown perspective, if you could.
Yes. Basically. Yeah. So he's gone first class. Like he's a legend. Yeah, because like, you know, too many people, like people are afraid in Parliament to stand up for us. They think it'll alienate him. And he's just gained popularity. He gained so much popularity by being the caramel dude that's like, nah, like the Nazis should be allowed to have a party. Yeah, so it's funny. I'm not making any grand predictions as to his political career. It's not going to go anywhere. And I'm not saying he's a lolcow either. I'm not saying like we just point and laugh at him. But yeah, it is. It's just fascinating where politics is at in the collapse of Rome, where it's like the non-Roman is the one defending the Romans in the Senate. It's just like it's a funny point of the collapse. So
yeah, definitely is a collapse.
And he gains, and he's self-interested as well. So like obviously people have individual motivations. Basically, everyone that is a party politician is self-interested. And I think he's more interested in getting into real estate and becoming a, you know, a boss, like, you know what I mean? Like
wealthy Australian. He's
kind of part of the manosphere. He's like connected to the manosphere. I think he's like shared stuff from, he said nigger on Twitter, for example. And like, they like tried to reprimand him in the Senate. And he was just like, he said something like, in this house, we say nigger or something like that. He said that on Twitter, I think. I don't know. Anyway, he's a funny dude, but yeah, good luck to him. I'm a racist, but I can treat people with respect. I'm a respectful racist. If someone's going to defend our interests, you know, in court or in, you know, it's just like, it's kind of like mind boggling.
He goes to Carmel Island. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. And the left hate him. The left hate him. They outright call him like a house nigger and like a Uncle Tom. Like they hate him. Like they hate, like they're,
well,
they,
it sounds
they
call like he's pretty independent. Traitor. It sounds like he's pretty independent.
The left call him a race traitor. Like, how funny is that? Like the level that we're on of the dialogue where the left are calling a brown person a race traitor for supporting white people. It's just, it's so funny. The left are the real racists. I remember that one. Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't work. But out of curiosity, the noticer, of course, has grown a great deal over the past so many years.
Yeah.
And they run a lot of good articles. I don't know anyone else that runs articles like this, although they make the mainstream media in Australia. The noticer is always putting good spin on things. And I just wonder, based on where we're at now compared to 5 years ago, how many people are talking about these crimes in a different way or even noticing them that wouldn't notice them before? Is it like just epic numbers?
It's epic. It's like the awareness. I've never seen anything like it. It's just, it's on another level. You know, I've been, since the disbandment, I've embedded myself in my local community. It's like, it's a good chance for me to, I've got so much free time now because I've got so much less on my plate. It gives me the ability to, like, you know, meet new friends, make new friends, meet new people. I've been embedding myself in the local community. And, I'm kind of in like a white flight, white fortress area. It could go either way. Cause I've moved recently. And the local community, every person I've talked to is like, can I have a photo with you? Like, it's just any person I've like been in any sort of encounter with, for an extended period of time, like by including myself in activities, when I'm just walking around the street. So people in the local community, I probably take 3 to 5 photos a day when I leave the house. I actually don't like leaving the house most days because I know I'm going to have to like do the celebrity thing. And that has never happened in my life. Like 6 months ago, before August, it was probably once a fortnight.
Now, do you think this is this exclusive to this area that you think would be white flight or white fortress? Is this because it's some holdout white area?
No,
because or it's just,
it's not just my,
from the press.
Like if I go into other suburbs, if I go into other areas that are similar, like they're white fortressy kind of areas, the same thing happens. And they're like, oh, I didn't know you lived in Doncaster. I'm like, oh no, I don't live in Doncaster. I'm just visiting. And they're just like, oh, okay. You know, like, you know, we should catch up for a beer sometime. I'm like, okay, random person. Like, like if you see me at a pub, buy me a beer. But like, you know, like that's going to be hard to do with everyone. Unfortunately, I don't know how to say that in a not rude way. But yeah, it's just crazy. Like so the media and whether it's mainstream or independent, the media, even the mainstream media can't hide what's going on because they have to report on it in order to get any kind of ratings because they're getting wrecked by the noticer. They're getting wrecked in terms of viewers because so many people are moving to independent news sources and social media, and that's to do with the generational gap. Like as the boomers die off and get older, obviously like people aren't watching the TV anymore. Like people in my generation, nobody really watches the news. No one watches TV. Everyone just gets their news from an app. So the social media, like, you know, being on Twitter, being on Instagram, these things is what's causing the average dude. Like I went into a gym the other day and there was about 22 guys in a class, and about 20 of them came up to me afterwards and shook my hand out of the 22. And there was 2 guys that were just getting mocked for living in a submarine. Like, you don't know this dude. And then all these young guys were just like, they were just taking selfie photos with me to put on their Snapchat and put on their Instagram, like to put in their story. And so it's like, they're just, oh, you know, all my mates won't, like none of my mates will believe me. Like, you know, and then they shake my hand. And then what's interesting is the way everyone communicates with me is they'll say, it's always a double negative, which is an interesting. So I'm trying to like catalog in my mind these conversations that I'm having with the public. And we're at the point now where almost every person that shakes my hand says, you know, I don't disagree with this guy. You know, I've never heard you say anything wrong. And it's like, I don't disagree. I've never heard you say something wrong. You know, I don't believe the media saying you're bad. You know, it's like double negative, double negative, double negative. It's like they're saying you are right. I agree with you. The media are wrong. And so, that's the super majority in these particular areas. And then in other areas, it's obviously not as strong. Like in the more multicultural suburbs, it's, you know, I get a lot of side eyes by brown people, and I get a lot of like passive aggressiveness. And, you know, and lefties will freak out, like people with blue hair and like look retarded. They will just go, oh my God, it's that monster. And so it's super polarizing. So like, I could only imagine at the Zoomer level, you've got so many of these young guys that are just like taking photos and just like, because they got to put it in their group chat because it's the, you know, it's the craziest thing to happen to them that week. Like I got to tell all the boys, like, did you know Thomas Sewell lives in this area? Or like, you know, or he, you know, goes to this gym, or he, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, it's crazy. It's, I've never experienced it before. And, what that is a symbol of, it's not like, oh, how cool am I? It's like what that's a symbol of is what I'm a symbol. I represent an idea. And the idea is that Aussies are fed up to the point where we don't care, whether we come across racist or not. And, you know, like that video went so viral where I was like, I don't want Australia turning into India. And it's like, that's how every Aussie feels. Like that's how everyone that's not a blue haired freak in this country, that's how they feel. It's the super, super majority of white people. And no one's got the balls to say that. Like even the most furthest right wing party in the country, One Nation, their rhetoric at the moment is we're not against all immigrants and we're not against immigration and we're not racist. And we just want to bring the cap of immigration from 230 down to 130. We want to drop 100,000 off that number. And the 230 number is a lie anyway, because the Labor Party says it's at 230. And like I remember 2 years ago, the actual real statistic was 964,000. And so like it was like 3,500.
You expect One Nation.
There's a 3,500. No, they won't. But they're going to get a really big seat at the table this next coming election. And we're going to be biting into each other's space if we can fight these laws, get the party back on track, and run at the election. Us and One Nation are going to take huge bites out of the Australian Parliament and be a massive swing vote and be a massive voting block against further wokeification and multiculturalization and everything else that's happening.
Now, how is your speaking of that? How is this party? You were forming a party before.
Yes. Yes.
Do these laws that are coming out affect anything?
They potentially do. So that's why the party stuff is all on hold, because it's all projects. It's baby and bathwater. You know what I mean? It's potentially like, so, you know, we have to challenge this at the High Court so that we can build a political party, so we can continue building our political party. Yeah. And that's why I've raised all that money. And that's why, you know, we're getting the ball moving. That's why, you know.
Have you formed the party yet, though? Have you legally done anything, or you did the... I know you got... We're getting signatures.
Yes.
You got all kinds of signatures.
There's a lot of ticks. And so all of the process of you got to get 5 ticks, have we begun that process? Yes. Yes. We have formed the party. We have registered the party. It's not officially registered yet because it's in that administration phase. Gotcha. It doesn't happen overnight. So it's in that administration phase. And
they haven't outlawed it though, or anything like that, right?
No, it hasn't been outlawed. And we've had to email the AEC and say, hi, you know, we want to put our application on hold. We don't want to withdraw our application. We want to put it on hold in order to, you know, pending a legal case.
Gotcha.
And the main legal precedent we have is in Australia. I think it was the old Liberal National Party, basically the centre-right party back in the day, I think it was Menzies or Harold Holt, one of them. They tried to ban the Communist Party in Australia, I think in 1951. And it went to, I think it went to a referendum, and I think they lost the referendum. Yeah. So I think 49% voted yes, ban the Communist Party. And I think 51% voted no, that's going to lead to problems. Not, you know, I'm not a supporter of communism, but that's a bad precedent. We shouldn't do that.
They didn't think it was fair.
It wasn't fair. So there's a massive, that's the biggest legal precedent in this country. Regarding political fairness. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's this idea of, well, hang on a minute. We might be doing something wrong if communists are getting popular. So let's fix the problem. And that is the Liberal Democrat. It's the Enoch Powell position. And if you're a Liberal Democrat, you know, it swings both ways. You have to be held accountable to, well, we have to allow fascism in the conversation because, or national socialism, whatever you want to call it. We have to allow this in the conversation because it exists for a reason and you can't shut it down. You can't shut down an energy that organically exists within the public. But there's not many liberal Democrats left in the system. They're petty tyrants. And when they see something that they don't like and don't disagree with, instead of saying, sorry, I'm probably ages away from the mic. They don't say, everyone always complains when I do my streams. They don't say, we should allow this in the conversation so that they can help fix the problem, because a problem exists. Otherwise, they wouldn't be this angry. They instead say they're angry for no reason. We should make it illegal for them to be angry. That'll fix the problem. Because the problem is that they're angry. They don't have any problems. Like, whatever their problem is doesn't exist. It's fairyland. We're not listening. We're not going to listen to people that are angry, that we disagree with. And it's like, oh, well, okay. How's that liberal democracy going to, you know, what's the logical conclusion of that when you've got two different groups of people angry at each other's views? Where does that go? It doesn't lead to extra social cohesion. So, yeah, it's interesting. And so the argument that the state has made, the State Department, not the government, because obviously they're technically different things. You got the bureaucrats and you got the parasites, the politicians. Well, they're all parasites, but you know, there is some part of it that needs to operate. Of course, we need a government. I'm not an anarchist, but obviously it's just a massive bloated, inflated whale. But you know what the bureaucrats are saying is that we shouldn't ban the NSN because, you know, regardless of how awful their views are, they're ultimately lawful views. And they're representing, you know, a position within society. And, you know, like, so there are people within the State Department that are trying to keep the liberal democracy experiment alive. And, you know, good on them. Sure.
Okay.
So it's noble. It's like the meme with the guy in the pool or on the tram or whatever. And he's just like, you know, at least they all assimilated. And he's just the only white guy in the cartoon.
Yeah.
You know? Or like, you know, we still have the Constitution or something. You know what I mean? It's like you can put whatever caption you want over it. The principled dead man, basically.
Now on to Joel, just so the audience knows, he's in jail. He's been in jail. How long? I know that he has a hearing coming up in April. Can you give us an overview of Joel?
So by the sounds of it, you know, he's already suffered so much. He may as well go all the way. I think originally there was some discussions at the start of just – when the first three bail apps failed, or this first two bail apps were rejected, the idea was like, you know, this is a summary offense. It's just a minor. It's so crazy that he's been held on remand for such a minor offense. And the idea was like, we'll just plead to it. They'll probably just give me a fine and I'll just be let out of jail, or I'll plead to it and they'll just do time served. Because I've already served so much more time that could possibly be punished for like harassing a politician on the internet, or allegedly harassing a politician on the internet. It's called using a carrier service to harass. And it's like, if I texted the local, you know, like hairdresser and I was just like, you're a piece of shit. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, it's kind of like that charge. It's like, you're just harassing someone over a carrier service. It's a nothing burger. It's like 94% of the people that get convicted of that crime, they get a fine or something. Like, it's just some crazy height. Like, it's not, you're not meant to go to jail for it. And so he's probably done the longest amount of jail in Australian history for anyone charged with that crime. And I mean, I've done the longest amount of jail time, I think, in the country for violent disorder, which is like a group of fray, more than four people or more than six people. I think I was the first person in Australia to go to jail for that, which is crazy. It is a serious offense. Like, it carries up to 10 years, but like coconuts, you know, like non-whites get into group fights all the time and get charged with it, and they're like kick people in the head while they're dead on the ground, and they get charged with violent disorder and they get community service.
Yeah, so just so the audience knows, Joel basically telegrammed a message about rhetorically raping.
Yeah, he basically said get in this lady's. So the full context is there's a politician called Allegra Spender, and when the Bondi massacre happened, the terrorist attack in Bondi, Allegra Spender got on Twitter and said, this is why we need to lock up every single neo-Nazi, even though it was two Indian Muslims that did the terror attack. She was saying on social media, we need to arrest every person in the NSN. Like, we have to stop them. Like, this is why, because stuff like this happens. And and it's like, what? Like, you want it? Like, literally, she's calling for all of us to be put in jail
because of Muslims.
Like, because we exist. And and I think allegedly Joel replied, everyone get in the comment section and rhetorically rape this bitch. Like, obviously it's colorful language and obviously it doesn't pass the grammar test. But, you know, it's pretty robust language that is a pretty fair response to someone saying you should be locked up in jail for your political views. And rhetorical rape is like, he's just saying wreck her in the comment section, boys. Like, that's obviously what he means. Everyone knows that's what he means. The word rhetorical doesn't mean physical or actual or sexual or, you know, it just means get in there and destroy her. Like, it's just used as an uncouth synonym for, like, wreck her, destroy her. And he's the first, like, political prisoner, not just of, like, the multicultural police state in this exact scenario, but he's also the first political prisoner of the gynocracy. So, you know what I mean? It's like, if he said it to a man, you know, or if he said rhetorically bash this man, would he be in jail? So it's interesting. There's
That's
not
a good
just
point.
So we're winning over. So a lot of people that are seeing these articles about what's happening to Joel, they might not actually agree with our politics, but they're like, hang on a minute. Like, why is that illegal to say that? Like, obviously the rape word is an uncouth word and people avoid the word. They usually don't use it in insults, but it's not illegal. It's like the nigger. It's like the N word. Like, it's uncouth to say it, but it's not illegal to say the word. And they're trying to make it illegal to say the word, you know, like, just saying a word is a hate crime. Saying a word means you go to jail.
Where is he at right, like, now? Has he been moved? Is he in better conditions? Give us, have you been to see him? Is anyone allowed? No one's allowed to see him, right?
So only his missus has seen him. Yeah. Only his lawyer and his missus have seen him.
Okay.
He's in solitary confinement. He's in the worst possible conditions you could imagine. He's in the worst possible prison you could imagine. They just put you in the dungeon, you know. So this is, I've had the experience, and I'll tell you, he's in the worst of the worst of the worst. I've done a whole bunch of different versions of solitary confinement, and there's good solitary confinement, there's bad solitary confinement. He's in the bad solitary confinement, and he's done a lot of time in it. So, but he sounds in good spirits. He sounds very sharp. This amount of time is not going to break him. You know, he's a very headstrong person, and I think the average person would be broken by now. Absolutely. The first couple of months are really, really hard of solitary confinement. They're really hard. And it actually gets easier the stronger you are. It gets easier the more time you spend in there. So the more you can build up a tolerance to it, you can overcome suffering. You know, you can have a kind of Aryan Buddhist take on it. You can actually get to the point where you overcome suffering and you actually start enjoying it. And it's almost beyond stoicism. You know, you can try being stoic in there and you'll find out.
Are they denying him food? Are they put him on a special diet? Are they denying him showers? Because the last time I read, they were, you know, he couldn't.
They're like messing with him. Yeah, they're messing with him. Yeah, they're messing with his food. He doesn't have a bathroom in his cell, and they're not taking him out to go have showers. They're stopping him from getting runouts, which is the worst thing, because you don't get fresh air and fresh sunlight. You know what I mean? They've denied him books. He can't get books in there. So I've been instructing everyone to send letters with A4, like books of PDFs printed out on A4, folded up and put in a letter, because they're denying him books. So he's read three or four books in there now, that people have sent him like a chapter at a time in letters. So he kind of has to like read it a chapter at a time. So that's the only way he's getting reading material.
Well, that's nice.
It is good. And that's because you can't mess with the mail. They can mess with packages, but they can't mess with the mail. It's like, it's more constitutionally protected. You know, the prison wants to fuck with your mail, and they do sometimes, and they'll look for any excuse. You know, it's a very, like, prison guards have been taken to the Supreme Court for messing with mail. You can't mess with mail. There's a lot of precedents. So, but somehow you can mess with mail when it's a package, but not a letter. So yeah. It's annoying. It's really, really annoying. But his
hearing is in April. When? April, beginning of
start
April?
Start of April. Start of April. Yeah. I think the 5th. Yeah.
April soon. 5th.
Yeah.
And what
Supreme
are
Court.
The odds?
That's a Supreme Court bailout. Strong. The odds are strong. Supreme Court's pretty fair. Yeah.
So yeah, because pay the money to the temple. This is unprecedented. Yeah. You can't really. There's all these other. I mean, there's guys that have been let go for serious violent offenses just.
Yeah,
slapped on the wrist, and they're keeping him in there for a word.
Yes, for the R word. He used the R word. Yeah, he's on a holiday.
Towards someone in power.
Towards someone in power, yes.
So April 5th, and you think he might get out then? You think there's a high probability?
I think there's a very strong chance. I'm not a betting man, but I'd say 75%.
Yeah. Okay, and what happens if they don't let him out? What happens beyond the Supreme Court?
Well, then it comes back down to magistrates because the criminal charges are so minor. He's going to the highest court to deal with a criminal charge that's in the lowest court.
That's crazy.
It's
because
crazy.
They won't give him bail, right?
Yes, correct. Yeah, correct.
They're denying him bail because they're saying he's
and it's a non-indictable offense. So
yeah, they're saying
which means like there's the lowest court, there's the middle court, and there's the highest court, and then there's the federal court for constitutional matters. And it's like when I got denied bail, they could at least argue from the lowest court that this is a matter that's going to be heard in the middle court. And so that strengthens their argument to deny someone bail. They can't make that argument in Joel's case. They're literally holding him on like a minor offense. Whereas they argued that this is actually one of those medium offenses. It crosses that threshold that we can start fucking with bail because prison is on the menu. You know what I mean?
They're basically
how the bail laws work.
They're holding him because they're worried about terrorism. Is that right?
That's what they're lying about. Yeah, that's the bullshit loopholes that they're using. But they're holding him on a charge that's equivalent to a speeding fine. Like that charge that he's been charged with is the same weight in the courts as a speeding fine.
And they're not even giving him bail.
Correct. Correct. Yeah, it's nonsense. Yeah, people don't understand how low that charge is in the scheme of charges. There are murderers that are on bail. There are murderers on bail. There are lots of murderers on bail.
And so basically when the prosecution goes in to these judges, because this is moved through the courts, they've denied him I guess they're denying him due process on some level. This has been in the court. How many times has the judge denied it, judge overruled?
Three times he's been denied bail. So that's why we're going to the Supreme Court. And he hasn't been denied bail at the Supreme
Court. It's a dangerous precedent if the Supreme Court doesn't rule in his favor. It would be a dangerous precedent.
Very dangerous. Yeah, very dangerous.
And they have to know that.
Yeah.
Because you could technically, you could get another government, the Tom Sewell government, that just decides to hold people indefinitely for being anti-white terrorists.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, look, they've used that in the book. If they're going to use it against us, we're going to use it against them. Simple as. So that's make us suffer, you know, like hold us as long as you want. You've already opened that can of worms. That's the minimum. That's the new rule book. We play the game by the rules.
Yeah, that's the thing now. They're going to throw around the T word, terrorism, or we're worried about terrorism so we can hold them indefinitely.
Yeah, that problem with their argument is it doesn't stand up in the Supreme Court. So at the Magistrates Court, it's not a real court. It's not a real court. It's a fake kangaroo court. And it's crazy what goes on in that place.
It's like magistrates here. It's like a negotiation table or some type.
Yeah, yeah. It's a make-believe court where you don't have to provide evidence. It's literally a make-believe court where you don't have to provide evidence. We don't have time for that. We don't have time for evidence. The testimony is the testimony. So what someone says, if they're from the police, is taken as fact. So the police can call you a terrorist at the Magistrates Court, and it can't be challenged. They don't charge you with terrorism, but they basically just say, like, you know, he's a national security risk and blah, blah, blah. And, like, that's not actually challenged. Like, no one's cross-examined. Like, I'll give an example. When I was held in remand the first time for 7 months, I went for a bail application and it was denied. And one of the reasons why the judge denied my bail at the low court, at the Magistrates Court, was because the police alleged in the bail application that I had threatened witnesses from the prison cell. So I had access to a phone once every second or third day. I could make a call to a friend. And the police alleged that from those phone calls, they have recordings that I threatened witnesses from those recordings. And the judge was just like, this is horrible. You know, this is horrible. Bail denied. And we didn't even get a chance to respond. And I said to my lawyer, what's going on? What's going on? Why didn't that guy get cross-examined? Like, why didn't we put him on the stand and be like, okay, provide the evidence. Let's play the phone. Let's hear the phone calls. What did I say on the phone? Because I didn't say anything. I was innocent. I didn't say anything of the sort. I know that's a serious, I know I was warned by the lawyer as well. Just every phone call is recorded. Don't say anything, you know, like be very careful and don't say anything dumb. And, you know, I knew the law and I did not break the law. And they just said I did with no, and they provided no evidence. And then I didn't get a bail hearing for another 5 months because it was COVID. So the courts were like all backlogged because they were fining so many, like thousands of people for like leaving their house when they're not allowed to and fining them $5,000. Like, it was fucking madness. And so it took 5 months to get another court date to get bail. And then I got it at the county court, which is a real court, which is the middle court. And they didn't make the argument. They didn't make the argument that I threatened witnesses. They just were like, we don't oppose bail. And the judge was like, well, let him out immediately. What's he doing in there? Why is he in there for 7 months if you don't oppose bail? And the judge was just like, just slammed the hammer. It was like, you're free. Get out. And I was like sitting in the room because I was in a Zoom call. I wasn't even in the court. I was in solitary confinement in a concrete cell, like in a Zoom call. And I was like, that's it? After 7 months? Like, what? Because at the county court, if they make an allegation like that, they have to back it up with evidence. But the magistrate's court, you don't need to provide, you don't need cross-examination in a bail application. You can just, the police just lie.
They basically rubber stamp anything the prosecution wants.
At the magistrate's court, what they say is the evidence is that the cop said it on the stand.
Oh, God.
That is the evidence. It doesn't have to be cross-examined. The evidence is like, his you can work. Get an expert witness.
He's like God.
You can get an, yeah. Yeah, he's like God. In those courts, the police are God. Yeah, the police are the law. And the police are being paid by politicians to keep Joel Davis locked up.
So basically, you have to go through these magistrates to get to a real court. It's correct. A process. It's part of the process.
The process is the punishment.
Right. So they just send you to, you don't get a real trial or a real court or real hearing until you go through the magistrates a couple times, it sounds like.
Yes, correct. Yeah.
What a bunch of bullshit.
Yeah. And so, the magistrates can send you to prison for up to 12 months. I think maybe 2 years in exceptional circumstances, but they've got pretty wide range of powers, the magistrates. But
are they lawyers? Do they have to be lawyers at least?
Yeah. A magistrate is like a senior lawyer, like that, okay. That applies to be a magistrate. And there's obviously a political process and they have to be appointed by politicians.
So there's a lot more magistrates than there are judges.
Yes. A lot more. There's probably double or triple, even more. Maybe four judges, times. Magistrates deal with like parking fines, domestic violence.
Do magistrates have to be elected? Do judges have to be elected? They're just appointed.
No, they're appointed by politicians.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
All of them. Every level, every layer, they're appointed.
Because only the ones that get appointed here are federal. But everyone else, you know, is generally running.
Well, there's state courts and federal courts. So the state politicians appoint the state and the federal appoint the federal.
Gotcha. Yeah. Well, we'll be watching. Hopefully he gets out. Like I said before, I've had him on so many times. And I'm happy to hear he's in good spirits. Does he get Australian jails, I'm assuming, have some kind of commissary? I don't know how bad the food is. I know the jails in Australia and Europe are considered a lot better than America on average. But that doesn't mean you don't have hell holes in these places, obviously, like we do. And that's where he's at. Can he get commissary or anything like that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he's got his peanut butter. He's got his tuna.
Okay. I don't know. Can you get online and put money into his commissary? That's not allowed.
Nah.
Okay.
Now in Australia, you have to be on the visitor list. So only next of kin can put money on your. Yeah.
Okay. So you would have to be on, like, his wife or his lawyer would have to put $10 or $20 when they're at the jail. Okay. You can't do that online.
Yeah. There's a free Joel Davis Give, Send, Go. And I think he's raised almost $40,000 on that for his family. And
I put it up before. I didn't know it was still ongoing though. Okay.
It's still there. Like if people want to continue contributing, but he's definitely got enough, to help with these legal fees and help with his family and stuff like that. So, but yeah, people want to continue donating. Absolutely.
Well, obviously he can't work. His wife had a new kid. He's never even seen can she take the kid to, or
I think
the
she's, baby? I think once and maybe there was some complication. I can't remember.
Yeah,
I remember when it was being organized.
Didn't even get a chance to see his child.
Yeah. they're doing everything to mess with him. So I can't remember exactly what happened because I haven't spoken to him for about a week. But what was I going to say? The if you donate a gift saying go, he's got plenty of money in his commissary. So don't, like, people don't need to transfer money to him.
Well, no, I mean, like, I didn't
38
know,
grand.
I didn't know what the rules are, because here you can sometimes get online, pull up a number, and then just send $10 or whatever. You know what I'm saying? I'm just asking.
Yeah, of course.
Interesting. Well, I do appreciate it. I've had you on here for an hour and a half. You said you needed to go, which is fine.
Yeah, well, I can do one more question, or this one more thing. You know,
I don't have any more questions. I just wanted to know about Joel and to see what the general mood is over there on your political party and what's going on with that. And I don't think I have anything else. Let me check the chat. Never given my own money to a cause and given money this week for Joel. Well, yeah, you worry about his family and stuff like that, but these guys have a very tight-knit organization, and Tom is doing things smart, challenging the system and dismantling the organization and, taking it one step at a time through the courts. But when is your – do you have any more cases in court coming up?
Yeah, I got another 3 or 4. I might do a little bit more prison time, unfortunately.
But is there anything you can get locked up for again?
Yeah. There's some incidents run up that hill. That's all right. It'll be fine.
Oh, okay. That's right.
Man is not – what's the quote? There's a quote. It's like, man is not given struggles he's not made fit to bear. Always bear that in mind.
When are you in court next?
I'm in court 3-4 times a month. Soon. Coming up. There'll be one coming up. I got offensive behavior. I hurt the feelings of brown people saying something in a speech 2 years ago. Like, it's just nonsense charges. It's just infinite nonsense charges. Yeah.
These days you guys have pretty good lawyers over there willing to represent you, it seems like.
Yes.
Which is new for guys on our side. That's kind of new in America as well.
Yeah,
got some pretty good lawyers here that are like, enough is enough. We'll represent you.
Yeah, there's people that are just sick of it, even within the temple. So they got to be careful because they've got standing, and the more standing you've got, the more you got to play the game. So it's its own world, the lawyers. But it's fascinating. It's really fascinating.
Yeah. Mm. Interesting.
Okay. But yeah, thank you for having me. Yeah. Thank you for having me. I do appreciate it.
Thanks for coming
it's
on.
A pleasure. She said Joel's done it 10 times. What am I? 3? Is this third?
I think it's 3. I normally just, because the time change, it can be rather difficult, actually, scheduling shows, because in America we have daylight savings times. And, Joel typically, I got used to having him on. I met him through Keith Woods in 2021. And we've kind of he's come on and the website likes them, all the guys on the website and stuff like that. They've gotten used to Joel. So I always have on, he's like the Australian spokesman. I just have on to pretty much talk about anything. And I've had on Blair as well. I've known Blair for a long, long time as you have as well.
Well, the scene is very tight knit down here. So
yeah, it is.
Yeah. Basically everyone involved in nationalism in Australia are all friends. And Australia is not a super small place. It's obviously only 1/10 the size of America in terms of population, but the whole scene in Australia is all on the same page. So, it's a really strong place to be in for a little country, for a young country. They call us the young country. So, yeah, we're doing well and we're not giving up, and you're going to see us around forever. So, yeah, we're not going away. Don't be blackpilled, never blackpill. Things are always moving in the right direction, even if you can't see the silver line. So, nothing can stop an idea.
Run up the hill known as Sewell's Charge.
Run up that hill. Sometimes you just got to run up that hill in life.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, man. Have a good weekend. Have a good weekend and happy birthday again. And thanks, guys, for all your support.
Thank you.
I'll be back on Sunday. Cheers.
Thanks, man.